Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to season two, episode 13. Whoa. Of the same old Wombles. Yes, welcome to our spooky edition. And indeed, we can start with the horror show that has been the last two games for the Dons. We're also going to have a chat about the DTB elections because we're the same old Wombles. This is what we do. And also, want to touch on some other relevant news as well. Alex is going to have a chat about the World Cup in 2034, and we'll reflect on what I can only see is the only highlight in the footballing world, which is the Wimbledon's women's team, which is going from strength to strength.
No one doubts the way you feel. No, your passion's very real. I must say we're all impressed. The way the fans approach this test. The days have gone when football clubs live and fly just on fans' love. Davis isn't just a game, and tough decisions must be made.
So then, let's start with the football. And it's been a complete nightmare. And I think we all hoped that it would just stick to home games. And I'm wondering, first of all, what are we doing that's wrong at the moment? Alex, have you got any thought? Where are we going wrong at home? Where are we going wrong generally?
I
Eight
think there's two.
goals conceded.
I think there's two things to say. In any season, you're going to have a couple of really nightmarish results. So, you're going to ship four goals occasionally. We are not Man City. We are not Arsenal. We do concede goals. I think coming off the run of not conceding many, if any, for ages and ages has sort of made us forget that. The fact that we've strung two really bad results back to back is really disappointing. But, and I hesitate to say this, but if they're the only two four goal matches we concede in the season, then well, I can live with that. The only other positive out of it is that Johnny, in his interview after the second drubbing, the Morecambe game, seemed to show that he knew what went wrong, and that I don't, I feel really, really hopeful that maybe he can turn it around. But he's got to. We're at that stage now, I think, where he's got to. We had a really positive start to the season. We seem to have gone downhill massively. We are being a bit unlucky in front of goal, people failing to put the ball in the back of the net, but that still wouldn't give us a win because, if we're shipping four goals a game, we're not going to win many. Mind you, I do want to be at the games where we do win those. So I don't know. The trouble is that our next game up is the FA Cup and we're at home, which is obviously bad news against a team in the League One division higher than us, which is obviously bad news. So, we're not expected to win this one, but I can't answer where has it gone wrong. I think the team needs to pull its socks up, and I think that the manager needs to get a grip of it. And I think he's got a few games to do that, but I think we're starting to be at that point where he does need to do so.
Of course, if you lose a couple of games in a row, and everyone starts clamoring for the manager's head. So, what do we reckon, eh? How long has JJ got? What I found quite interesting at the start of the season, because we're fickle, we're football fans. Everyone is chanting his name with Johnny Jackson's Yellow Blue Army, and it's so what? How long has he got? And
Oh,
the
he's
other
got.
thing with the Cheltenham game is that obviously they'd gone eight or nine games without scoring a goal, bottom of the league, and now they've found some form. This is a great. I'm really excited about playing them in the cup now.
Listen, I he's not. I don't think he should be imminently on his way out. Of course, football is a results business. You lose a few games, you win a few games. That's all par for the course. Losing, shipping four goals in two games in a row is not acceptable. Does it mean he has to go now? Of course not. I think he's got, I don't know, five or six games to show that we can win and perform better. We don't have to win every one of those five or six games. We can lose on Saturday and it not be the worst result in the world. But if we go five games without winning, then I think that would be a problem for him.
Yeah, I think Alex is right. I mean, the last couple of games are bad because, you know, eight goals in two games against you just looks... It's kind of a bit unheard of. So you think there's something major gone wrong, you know, is there a big flaw? But of course, we saw the Accrington game. It was all right at parts, but the setup at the beginning was all a bit weird, I thought. And of course, we had three changes at half time, which was great. And I thought 2-0. But of course, we let that goal straight in at half time, probably because the players, I don't know, they obviously warmed up, but they weren't thinking. And so that kind of messed us right up. And of course, we tried to claw it back. But yeah, if you looked at the replay on TV for the game on Saturday against Morecambe, like this, like it was a bit schoolboy-esque in terms of there was loads of shots, they just were never going into the net. So yes, we can't, you know, like you said, Alex, you can't let in four goals and then expect to score six, right? But we should have scored some more goals in that game than we did. But if we defended properly or whatever, then, you know, it's a totally different game. But I do think that, obviously, we went back to 4-4-2, I think, for the Morecambe game instead of the weird, I don't know, it's 4-4-1-1, it said on the BBC for the Accrington game, but it looked even weirder than that for me. But and at times, they just were asleep on that Tuesday, which was a bit frustrating, but... Hey, they had the Oktoberfest thing, so that was all right. Martin got me a drink at half time. I didn't even need to go and get one because he was already out the door. So that was quite nice. So yeah, Tuesday was all right day, and I managed to get home even though it was chucking with rain. Not as much as it's going to chuck with rain this week, from what I can tell. But yeah, I think people are calling Johnny out because they just think he doesn't have a plan B. But he made loads of changes in both games, and. Appropriate changes, I think. So I'm not a football manager, so I don't really know why it would go so horribly wrong. But
it's really difficult, because I think one of the thoughts I had is that we've got the best defence and the best back four that I've seen with us for a long time. It looks, I mean, obviously there's that quote, isn't it, from Brian Clough, on paper we've got the best team. The trouble is we play on grass. But I think that genuinely, I look at it and I think our back four looks really good. What I worry about now is the over-reliance on Al Hamady. Much like Asal the season before, you know, we're playing him to death. I mean, he's been on international break. He's come back and he's straight into our starting lineup, literally 2 days after he's played for Iraq, I think. And there's no real backup. And I think this is one of our weaknesses. We haven't got anyone who covers for him. And also I'm just worried about this wonderful defence now showing cracks, which I didn't think we were doing. I thought we were really solid at the back. I mean,
You know, players have off games. You're right about Ali. He is expected to carry the team. I still think he will. I think that we are in a better place, a much better place than we were last year, mm-hmm. If for no other reason than Jake Reeves. But, you know, people have to perform. And we have too many games where, not necessarily all 11, but certainly nine of the team are not at their best. And we can't expect to win games like that. We're not a money bags club with all the top paid players who can afford to rest our stars and so on. This is League Two football. This is as the Premier League used to be in the good old days when it was Division One, where you would have consistent teams put out. You didn't have squads of 35 players, all of whom own £1 billion a week. You know, you expect your players to have to perform once or twice a week, and they will go through patches, and we're in a really bad patch. So I think they'll turn it around. They need to turn it around. But, you know, they're not machines. You can't expect them to do the same thing and do it brilliantly every single game. So I'll give them that. But, you know, it's just a bit worrying. It's a bit depressing, isn't it? I mean, I'm glad we had a good Oktoberfest. I think that's a good innovation. Tuesday night football, we'd hope for something better. You know, Liverpool always talk about European Tuesday, European nights at Anfield. And there is that sort of slightly different atmosphere, even against Accrington with their 212 fans or whatever it was. So, you know, that was a nice event. It's just a shame about the result. Let's move on. Let's see if we can turn over Cheltenham on Saturday, and suddenly we'll be in the next round of the cup, and we'll be starting to think one more win, and we can get Arsenal away.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you're right. I mean, I think we talked about it enough, really, on the football side of things. My only thought was maybe we need to look at rotating it a bit more when we're playing Saturday, Tuesday. I'm just grateful that we've got a week off. Admittedly, we've got a big clash in the London Senior Cup tomorrow night. I think it's Bengal someone away, so that's it because we haven't won that trophy since 2014, so it's time to bring this London Senior Cup home, so we'll keep out for that. Come on, lads. But yeah, so moving on then. So it doesn't rain, it pours, does it? The big news that's come out over the last day or so is from the Don's Trust. So, you know, we've always said that what we really want is a contested election. But it looks like there have only been four people that are stood for the DTB. And as a result, there isn't going to be an election, and all four of them are now going to be on the board. And also there's a change. So three of them are going to be on the board for the next 3 years. And one of them, Richard Shepherd, I believe, is going to be on for the next 2 years. So this is the situation we have. And it's something that we've raised before, and I'm sure it's something that other pods have talked about before as well. It's a concern. And my general belief is that people are scared of standing for the board. People are put off. I mean, I've thought about standing before, and just listening to the experience of people who've been on the board, I wouldn't do now. You know, you can get intimidated at the ground. You certainly get abuse on social media. There's no real, apart from obviously the philanthropic bit of being part of a board and delivering for our club, there doesn't seem to be another real benefit. And I think we might have to look at that as well, particularly if we're looking to get younger people or other people involved in it. Maybe there should be other incentives is something I think we should look at. But it's really sad indictment that we're in this position where we've got an uncontested election. And so no one will bother to look at the manifestos or make comments back.
Do we even get to see the manifestos?
Their manifestos are available.
Okay, I haven't had a chance to look at them. I was going to read them, but
yeah.
I mean,
so Adam, you're going to stand. You were going to stand, and you have stood for the last couple of times. If you'd have stood this time, you'd have already been in.
Yeah, winning by default is the sweetest victory. I suppose if I'd stood, I would have made it contested and then lost again. But yeah, no, I went in for the last two because I thought I could bring something, but. As I've talked about before, I feel that I can't really bring what the club needs now, and being far away means I couldn't dedicate the time. And I think that for me is the main thing. I think they need to do other things. The kind of ideas I don't think are necessarily going to fly. You think they kind of revolve around sort of e-football and other things, and just being a sensible. I just wanted to kind of be a sensible voice on the board. I think there are some sensible voices now, to be fair. But even in the run-up to those, you know, there was Stick Online in different ways. Mainly I used the pro board stuff. And even then, people were going nuts because I talked about the word enshrinement. I wanted to make sure that we were never not fan-owned, and that caused all kinds of kerfuffle. And it was just like, oh, my word. So I wouldn't stand unless they do something different about how they manage the trust overall to have other people getting involved. And this kind of idea of these non-executives, these NEDs, I haven't seen much of that happening. you know, it's, you know, not having a contested election is frustrating, but it does show that, well, I don't, I mean, again, I haven't read the manifestos of these people, but from what the names I've seen, I'm pretty sure they're probably all quite pro fan ownership and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's not necessarily some real kickoffs in there, which we were kind of worried about before. And that was one of, also a reason for standings. I felt it was a bit of a, this sort of divide appearing, which again, we've talked about before, this has been not being as big as often made out. I don't know. Yeah, in 3 years, you've gone for 3 years by default. That's a bit, it's a bit rubbish, isn't it, really?
What do you think, Alex? I mean, that just it alarms me.
It is quite alarming. But first thing to think to say, I think, is congratulations to the four people who did put themselves forward. They've done absolutely nothing wrong. They are standing for election. They weren't to know until the close of nominations that they were going to be elected unopposed. Yes, it's very concerning. I think the three-year thing might have been a bit of a put-off to some people who, particularly newbies, who perhaps don't know whether they want to commit to 3 years. I think the second problem is the, as you said, Matt, the abuse that people have been getting. You know, I think you should be accountable as a member of a Don's Trust board. Of course, you should have to answer for yourself, but you should have to answer for yourself to people who are asking legitimate questions in a polite way. And I think that some respect for the people, the volunteers who put themselves forward for this, is absolutely essential. To all those who didn't get elected or didn't stand, you know, you have no right to criticise, because you had this opportunity to stand. If one or two of them had stood, they would have been elected unopposed as well. And they would have had a seat on the board to be able to put forward their arguments and see what happened. And, you know, fair play to them if they had, but they didn't. So thank you very much. Wait until the next election and have a go then if you still feel that the club is going in the wrong direction. I wish every success to the board. I would like to hope that they will be able to fill these two spaces, simply because there is a problem with a board that doesn't operate at full capacity. It's not able to dedicate enough people to specific tasks, and that would be to the detriment of the club. So hopefully the board will meet fairly soon. The new people aren't due to come on board, so to speak, until the new year anyway, or sometime around then. So the board have a few weeks now to be able to say, right, how do we fill these places? Do we go for another special election? If so, are we going to get people to stand? If not, do we co-opt? What do we do? I think it's important they find people who are able to contribute fully to the board, come up with good ideas, implement those good ideas, be accountable, be upfront about the merits of the board and the merits of being a fan-owned club. And that's an essential task.
I think what's interesting is the co-opting thing, because that caused a bit of a stir last time as well. Is how they go about doing that, and I think then that needs to be clear as well. So if they are going to be co-opting people on, we need to know what the process is. So and that needs to be very clear. I mean, my thought would be, I would look back on the last elections, for instance, and go, well, who are the people that didn't get in last time? Maybe we should talk to a couple of those. For instance, is a way. But if they're looking for particular skills, then it needs to be clear.
Sorry, but the problem, I'll just jump in before Adam quickly and say, but the problem there is you've got to ask those people, just as anybody else you co-opt, why didn't you stand for election this time? Adam's answered that, and I think he's answered it very well. But I think that other people, it becomes a bit of a difficulty when you're co-opting now to say, we've just had an election. We didn't have enough candidates. So why are the people we are co-opting, why do they fit and why didn't they put themselves up for election? Yeah. Which is why I would prefer, I know it's a risky business, but I would prefer to say, OK, we've still got time. Let's have another election. let's try and fill these posts by election, because that's the obviously it's the more democratic thing to do.
Yeah, I no, I yeah, I yeah, I have a con on my concern with the co-opting thing is yeah, is a concern. But yes, you're right. If it's people who've stood in the past and they didn't stand this time, then they have to. I don't know whether that's a, you know, I don't, I'm not. No one needs to talk to me anyway. But so, but I guess what isn't clear to me, and we talked about the Duns Trust website a little bit before, and I was bumbling around trying to find the things again, and I've sort of found them, but I'm then like trying to remember what I did and didn't read. But you know what would really help would be a really clear vision as to what the Don's Trust is doing over the next 3 years in terms of like just really simple vision. Because all I see at the moment and all I'm thinking about, which I can't manage my own home finances, let alone the finances of a football club. All I know about at the moment is that we've got to sort out this debt, you know, and that's all the people are talking about. And we're doing surveys on the debt and the debt. And it's like, well, I can't contribute to that money conversation because I don't really know stuff about that. But of course, if the vision is drive income through different spaces, what do they mean by that? You know, they clearly don't have the infrastructure for some sort of e-football thing. They clearly, you know, not into e-sports, I don't think. So what are they going to do? Is it more Oktoberfest? So do they need festival organisers, people who've got experience of running mini events? You know, what? Then you could sort of pitch the election a little bit and say, it's a 3 year term to take this vision forward. And that vision might well be somewhere dug in those documents at some point, but it's not clear, and especially around the election time. And if we do a special election or whatever it's called, then I would think they should make it so that it says, we've got space in the board, we can't facilitate a capacity of the board. This is what we do as the members that are currently in it. This is the things we're driving forward. And I know how they had those subgroups, but I haven't seen much specific action out of those other than the finance stuff. Yeah, so I think it just needs to be a bit clearer to spell out, but that might be just refreshing a bit of the website somehow. I mean, that's
Yeah,
doing a whole new.
I think the website could do totally with a refresh. I mean, it is unnavigable, and I can't even pronounce it. That's how unnavigable it is. But it's I find it's yeah, it's a real shame, and I wish there had been more people contested. And I wondered if in the run up to this, they would have seen the nominations coming in, and they would have seen it would have been quite low. Surely they might have seen that. A week or so ago, and there might have been some push at that point to encourage people to stand.
I bet the forms normally come in at 1 minute to midnight because that's kind of how I think I probably sent mine in.
Speaking as the former chair of the
Oh,
ESG, that's
okay.
definitely how it worked.
Yeah, okay.
And also, you've got a slight ethical thing about, you can't really to give secrets away from the nominations process, from the election process, until those certain cut-off times, one of which being the close of nominations. So it's got to be run in a totally neutral manner, because any sort of additional push is likely to attract, or could be accused of attracting, one type of fan over another type of fan. And we want to give everybody an equal chance. So I do understand that. I can't criticize what Matt and the rest of the ESG did at all, because I think they need to they've done what they were asked to do. I think the responsibility, to be honest, lies partly with the current board. They need to show what they're doing and show why it's a good thing to be a member of a DTB, and people should want to be on it. We should have those contested elections where we have 15 candidates for six spaces or whatever it is. And secondly, the fault comes with those people who are giving unnecessary and unreasonable grief to the current DTB and former DTB members. I'm not, as I said before, I'm not saying you don't have the right to criticise, you don't have the right to ask questions and to say why you think people are doing a bad job, if that's what you believe. But you've got to do it in the right way. And I think the grief that people are getting is probably part of the reason why people are reluctant to stand.
Yeah, and there are lots of ways. There are lots of ways to talk to the DTB. I mean, they do regular meet the board sessions online. There's obviously a DTB hut at the ground for every home match. There is pro boards, which I don't think is the best way to communicate with people. So I think there might need to look at how that works. So there are lots of ways, but I think threatening people in person at the ground is not the way to do it. Attacking people on social media,
Yeah.
personal attacks on social
No,
media is not the
totally.
way.
I do think it's a comms thing, and I don't think we should be saying refresh the website because that's a bigger task than it sounds. But why? I'm going to go to the SGM. I do the Meet the Dons Trust board things, but they are update meetings, which are the worst meetings as far as I'm concerned. They tell you some stuff, they update you on some stuff, and then normally someone who didn't make it is asking you what was the update, and you're like, I can't remember. They said something about money, and then. And yeah, okay, you can go to the kiosk and you can ask questions there. That communication is inward into the board, not out. So why not before an election, get the people who are to get like look at the club. We're producing way more video content than we've ever done, right? All we need to do is before elections or at certain points, do like a you said we did kind of video update, because that would really help us to understand the structure a bit more, I think. And then you'd be like, oh, okay, so that part of the board is doing this. That sounds exciting and interesting. I've got an idea that could help. And that might not be, I'm going to go and get myself elected, but it might be, I'm going to write to them and say, hey, or it might be, I'm going to go up to the kiosk and say, hey, that thing, it's a bit of a black box. That's, at the moment to me. And I supposedly am well into the Don's Trust, right? But I don't really know what they're doing. And I know they're probably doing good things. But that's also the same, we do it at work, this whole you said we did stuff, and it's a continuous feedback model. And it's just because we do stuff for students all the time, and they don't know about it. And if they don't know about it, then they get grumpy. And then when they get grumpy, they complain. And that's what's happening with our fan base.
I think that's a good point, because we do the surveys, and the surveys sort of like guide a lot of what the work of the DTB. So that seems like a good thing to me. I just want to ask a brief yes or no question to you both. Should we run another election for the for those two places, Alex,
Yes.
Adam? There. So the same old one was spoken, DTB. We are encouraging you, and I know you listen. We are encouraging you to have another election for those places as well. And another thing, and Alex, and Adam, you probably disagree with me on this, but I was thinking about incentives for members to be the DTB. So one of my thoughts is that you get a season ticket for the time you're the DTB, because you're putting in a lot of work and a lot of effort. So I would say, maybe a free season ticket, because you've got to be there for every game, and access to a DTB box or something like that, just in case, just because people have been threatened before. So a sort of like a safe space. Maybe I'm over-egging it slightly, but it just feels that maybe there could be some sort of incentives for people to stand. And I certainly think that that would encourage younger people to stand, knowing that they didn't have to pay for a season ticket or something.
I half agree with you. I think an incentive, I think maybe a free season ticket, fine. But I think it's important that DTB members are not taken away from the rest of the fans. We are fans.
I get you.
Some of us sit in the corner, some of us in the south stand, some people in the main stand, maybe somebody even in the whatever it's called, John Smith stand. But and some maybe have tickets in boxes and so on, and it's that mix that's important. I don't think that sequestering the DTB away in a box on the level two is necessarily the right answer. DTB members already have the wondrous opportunity, some would say pain, of being in the director's box for one or two matches every season because they're on duty on a rota basis, basically showing off what the club is about to the visiting directors. That can be fantastic. That can be a pain. I don't know. I've never been there. But I think it's right that our Donstruct, our elected fan representatives are there, as well as the PLC board and the various hangers-on who seem to be in there for no reason whatsoever. But I think by and large, our fans, our DTB members should be in the normal season, in the normal ticket areas, mixing with the fans and listening to the fans, because it keeps them in touch. But that comes, as I said before, with the requirement that they aren't abused and they aren't threatened. So yeah, let's give them a free season ticket. I'm all for that. But don't hide them away in some boardroom somewhere full time where they're totally inaccessible, and they and you might start to get some DTB members, and I'm not suggesting this of any of the current lot, obviously, but you might start to get some DTB members thinking they're better than other fans, and that's not the case. They are fans.
See, my most, I think we should definitely incentivize them. I was thinking food and drinks vouchers, but of course, my most controversial one would be that you get a pass to go to the front of the drinks queue. And that would definitely make them better than others. So we can't do
No, 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 no.
that. No, I think a season ticket sounds like a good idea. Like, why not? You know? And, but I agree with Alex, they should be able to sit where they want to sit. Yeah, I mean, and I think the access to some of the dons, you know, maybe some more perks just to make it feel like a special thing. I'm not saying necessarily have a permanent box or whatever, but I, you know, if there's a game where, I don't know, if your favourite player or something, you can kind of, they make sure that you're going to meet them and have a chat with them or something or whatever, you know, just stuff like that. I mean, you could kind of do that anyway, because I've done that, obviously. But yeah, something to incentivise would definitely be helpful.
Yeah, I think that's good, and I yeah, I agree. I agree. I think they need to be. It need to be in with the fans, because that way they get that experience, which in theory should help
I
work
mean, I
out
would
the
say we should give them all a free new home top just to force them to make sure they wear it for every single event that they're present at.
or maybe some of those the third kit shorts, because I can't see how we're going to get rid of those, because that's an
Going to be a
interesting.
mountain of those at the back of the shop.
Okay, well, listen, talking of uncontested elections, something else which has happened today, which is fun and exciting, is that, and I can't believe this is done so far in advance now, the 2034 World Cup has been allocated to that football-friendly state, Saudi Arabia. So we're looking forward to getting down there. I know Alex is clamoring, chomping at the bit to get his tickets for the 2034 World Cup. Alex, what the hell?
It's a disaster. It's a corrupt disaster. Come and sue me, Gianni. You can have a go. The FIFA decided that the World Cup would be moved around the world, continent or region by region, and that this context, the World Cup in 2034 would be hosted by a country or countries, as we've now discovered, from Asia or Australasia. Now, in general, I think that's a good thing. I'm not somebody who believes that football World Cup should always be held in Europe, because this is where the greatest concentration of fans is, or only in Europe or South America or whatever. I believe that a World Cup should be moved around the world. I also believe, to a certain extent, that if you can incentivize new fans and new clubs and new leagues to form, and grow a fan base, then it's reasonable to take it to a country that can host it, has the infrastructure to host it, even though they may not have a top performing league. So the US World Cup way back when was a good example of that. And it didn't quite work, and we've been through various iterations of Major League Soccer or whatever it's called these days, and it's not a brilliant league, but I do believe that was a reasonable choice. So this time, Asia and Australasia, brilliant. So you were going to set up, having just had a World Cup in Qatar, with Australia going, we want to host the World Cup. They're a team which has performed adequately in recent international tournaments. They're not a terrible team. They've got a league which works. They're used to hosting big sporting events, but the powers that be at FIFA set the rules effectively to say, well, it's not going to be you, Australia. It's going to be Saudi Arabia, because we know the Saudi League is desperate to sports wash, desperate to redeem the terrible, terrible reputation, and very well-deserved terrible reputation in the country. And they were prepared to throw money at it. And so at the last minute, Australia withdrew their bid and said, we can't host this because it's fixed against us. And so it's going to go to Saudi Arabia. So we're going to get another autumn World Cup. To be honest, I think we would have had a World Cup in the autumn anyway if it was Australia, but at least then it would be Australian spring into summer, and it would be fitting to do it there. But we're going to get a blisteringly hot autumn World Cup in a country which, and I know this is difficult to believe, but has even worse human rights record than Qatar. The abuse of women, the abuse of LGBT plus people, the incredibly bad and terroristic human rights record of the government. This is just an appalling country which is throwing its petro billions at sports and various other projects in order to try and brainwash people into thinking that it's an okay country. And it's not. There was enough protest at the takeover of Newcastle by the Saudi state, despite the fact they lied and said that it wasn't the Saudi state taking over. And then in America, a court case said, oh yeah, this organization is the Saudi state. So yeah, I'm going to be 64 years old when this World Cup happens, and the Beatles will be singing my song. And I won't be going, obviously. Hopefully I'll still care about football. Hopefully that the Wombles will still be in the league at some stage. But, you know, I couldn't care less about that World Cup now. I support England very much when we're playing in an international tournament. But this is FIFA at its most corrupt. And I thought after Sepp Blatter that would be difficult to achieve. But this is worse.
And the trouble is, Alex, that it's going to happen. I mean, you know, you would really hope that there would be certain countries who would just go, oh, that's enough. And almost form a breakaway. But that won't happen. It certainly won't happen with England, unfortunately. And it needs a major nation to formally sort of boycott it. And they won't, because football has a, I don't know, just doesn't care. I mean, I look at Qatar and what's happened there. I mean, what's changed in the country due to the World Cup? I know that they've got this league happening there, but their attendances are incredibly small. I mean, wasn't that the most embarrassing thing in a Saudi Pro League game where Gerrard's team lost 2-1, I think it was, away in front of almost 650 fans, and there were more fans watching Northern Counties League football. So it's, you know, what's the legacy here? And there's not a clear legacy in Qatar. Well, the, you know, attendances haven't gone up. The league hasn't. Has it vastly improved? What opportunities is it giving to local people? It just does feel corrupt. And you're right, Alex. You know, it's hard to beat Blatter, but we've done it, Adam.
No, I mean, all I was going to say is that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia said basically, like, if this increases our GDP by 1%, we're going to keep doing it, or 1.5%. So if you actually think GDP is a good thing, then sure, follow on. If you don't, then it's not going to help. It's not going to do anything for anyone who's of any consequence below. They're already very rich people there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, you said what can be done about it. I mean, in practice, nothing can be done. But the only thing that would cause anybody to have anything like a rethink would be if some of the more liberal countries, and I'm thinking maybe Germany and Scandinavian countries are the most likely, started having words about it. But this is football. And even in Germany, even in Scandinavia, football has a culture, and they know that they wouldn't win if they protested. They know this decision won't be changed because you've got far too many people in far too many countries who rightly or wrongly think, if we upset the apple cart this time, then we're never going to get anything again in the future. And FIFA is an incredibly rich organization, and hands out vast amounts of money, particularly to smaller and developing countries, which need it. But where the corruption kicks in, and that corruption might be cash, but it also might be, look, I'll support you to be elected to this position, political corruption. So you won't, if three or four countries kick off, even if Germany, one of the biggest footballing nations, kicks off about this, it won't do any good. So I suspect that they will grumble in private, but they won't do anything because it's not going to get anywhere, and they'll lose credibility if by trying.
It's a sad, it's a sad state of affairs. And I don't know what the, I don't know what the solution is other than nations withdrawing and setting up an alternative to FIFA. But that's not going to happen, is it? Let's face some facts. It's so rich. Anyhow, let us end our show on what I can only see as the positive football story and the positive AFC Wimbledon football story, which is that our fantastic women's team won on Sunday 5-0, 0-0 at half time, playing a side who were second or third in the league, challenging for the top spot. And by all accounts, very tight first half, but we completely annihilated them in the second half. I must get along because it would be really nice to see us win a match at Plough Lane. But there we are, top of the league. Played 8-1-7, lost one. Long may it continue, because the other thing that I think is very unfair in this particular league is it's only one side goes up. There's not a playoff situation. It's only one team up, and you've got to finish top of the league to get up. So let's hope that we keep this role going and we get up to the next league, because I know we're constantly beating sides who are higher in the league than us in the cups, and we probably deserve to be at least one league up, if not two. Come on, you Dons.
Yeah, we were really unlucky last season. Obviously, we had hashtag and we were clearly second best, in the top two in the league and just missed out. And as you say, should have gone up, but unfortunately, only one goes up. Okay, that's the rules. But this is our year. This is the year that AFC Wimbledon women can get a promotion, hopefully inspire more people, boys and girls, men and women, to play the game, and can get a load more fans across, along. It's nice to have success. It's nice to have teams at the stadium, AFC Wimbledon women, London Broncos, who are winning, and maybe they can inspire our men's team to do a bit better and start putting the ball in the back of the net and winning games.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just touching on the London Broncos, many congratulations to them. I wonder if they should become the London Dons, but that would just be a London Don. Anyhow, obviously we get some more money for that. Now they're going to be up in facing St Helens and Widnes and other sides from the north and maybe
Leeds,
France.
Leeds.
So I think that that's going to bring in some extra revenue, which is fantastic for the club as well. So many congratulations to the London Broncos. Many congratulations to the AFC Wimbledon women's team, who are doing fantastically. I'm just hoping, like you say, maybe that we can draw into the men's team can draw inspiration and start picking up some points, or maybe even get through to the next round of the FA Cup. Okay, that's going to be it for today. Thank you so much to Adam Proctor, Alex Folkes, for joining me, Matt Cooper, on the same old Wombles. Tune in again next week, and thank you, listener.
I was working in the lab late one night. night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.